Welcome back. This is Mark Sandler. Good to have you with us. And that's Revolution by Dennis Brown, who passed away on this day in 1999. As my producer, Mark Henry, informed me this morning, that great Bob Marley called him the greatest reggae artist of all time. So we just heard a piece because he passed away on this day in 1999. Before we enter our conversation here about the economy and where it is going and why the issues around Greece and more are really affecting more than just Greece and Europe, but affect the entire planet and where our economic future is going, I want to remind you the Mark Sandler Show is brought to you in part by MeQ, Baltimore's credit union, offering a full range of financial services. MeQ, Baltimore's credit union, is helping its members and its community prosper. When you invest in yourself, MeQ invests in you. Remember, it's a credit union, not just a bank. It belongs to you. Money comes back in the end. More information at www.mecu.com, or you can go to steinershow.org, where MeQ, Baltimore Credit Union's banner is. We are going to look at the crisis in Greece. And as somebody texted me a little earlier, said, well, why Greece? What's it got to do with us? It has a lot to do with us. It has a lot to do with America and the world. It has to do with the European Union and what effect that has, ripple effect on the economies of the world. It has directly and indirectly to do with the debt crisis facing Puerto Rico, which is a commonwealth of the United States. It has to do with the battles across the Pacific states. I was reading the Australian press this morning about the battles over TPP in the Australian Parliament, and it raises many issues. And so we're going to look at all those questions today with your help at 410-319-8888. You can write to us here at talk at steinershow.org. You can tweet me at Mark Steiner. But do call if you can, 410-319-8888. You can also log on our Facebook pages. I have not looked at our Facebook, but I have to do that quickly so I can see if you've written in, 410-319-8888. We are joined by Kostis Papadantinakis, who's a native of Greece, spent most of his adult life in Baltimore as a teacher and activist. He's earned degrees from Athens College in Classics, Princeton University of Public and International Affairs, PhD in Economics from Cornell, and he follows Greek economic political affairs both professionally and as a frequent visitor. Aris Melisatoris is with us. He's been on the show before as well. Interim dean of Stevenson University, Brown's School of Business and Leadership. Of course, the former Secretary of Business and Economic Development for Maryland. Good to see you again, Aris. Welcome.
Great to be here.
Imara Jones joins us by phone. Imara is a host of Caffeine TV, economic justice contributor for ColorLines.com, and former international trade policy advisor for the Clinton White House. Imara, welcome back.
Thanks for having me.
Always good to have you. And you all, please do join us at 410-319-8888. So I'm always trying to figure out where to go with this conversation, where to begin. But let me – I want to take a step back and look at the root for a minute. We read these headlines. I would venture to guess that the vast majority of people, because of the way our lives are and watching television and getting most of our news that way, and some people from public radio, but many people just watching TV – and see the headline in the paper that Greece is in a debt crisis. They might pull out of the European Union. And so most Americans go, this is interesting, but so what? What does it really mean? Why does it affect us? How did Greece get to this place, and why should we care? I think is where many people are when they look at these headlines. So I'd like to go around the room and see what you all think. And let me start with Imara. And we go to Aris for his response and then conclude that first portion with Kostis. Imara?
Well, Greece is important because it is a part of the euro. And so it's important for people to remember that there's the European Union. And the European Union, of course, is important because it's the single largest economic zone in the world. The United States, of course, is the largest economy. But because the economies of Europe are bound together into a single market, it is the largest economic market in the world, the largest economic zone. It's the largest trading partner of the United States. It's the largest source for foreign direct investment. So it's a big deal. Now, aside from the European Union or inside the European Union, dozens of countries have gathered together under a single currency, and that single currency is the euro. And of course, everybody knows that the way currencies operate in part is out of confidence. So one of the reasons why people are willing to accept euros or to buy euros for trade purposes. So for instance, when you buy a BMW, right, you use dollars, but those dollars actually get translated into euros to be able to pay BMW and vice versa. But the only way that we're able to be able to trade and interact with each other is because we have confidence in each other's currency. We believe that when we go to the bank and put in dollars in order to purchase something, that that dollar is going to be honored. And the same thing is for the euro. And that works the same way globally amongst companies and businesses and individuals. So currencies and money, of course, are the lifeblood for the global economy. And the faith that we have in each other's currencies are the backbone of that system. Well, one of the problems with the euro is that, one, it's a new currency. And one of the premises of, I mean, there are lots of details in all this, but the premise of the currency is that the money of everyone gave up their individual currency. So Greece gave up the drachma, Germany gave up the Deutschmark, France gave up the franc, right. And that they would all come together into one monetary union. But they kept the political decisions for how each country would run their budgets and spend their money separate. Right. So we're all bound together by we're in a collective entity, but we have separate decision making processes. And one of the problems with where Greece is on debt, and we can talk about how they got into a debt crisis, is that if Greece exits the euro, that then hits the confidence of the euro. That raises serious questions about whether or not this essential backbone for the world's largest economic zone is true and real. And something that people can count on. And so if that happens, if Greece exits and there's a question about the euro, then it has global financial implications because it hits the very confidence that people have in the world's largest economic zone. And that's the key problem. It's not, Greece is 11 million people. It's a relatively small economy. But if it goes, it raises serious questions about the entire enterprise of the European Union. And of course, there are lots of other countries within the European Union that also have very serious debt crises, Italy, Portugal, and Spain. And so the question is, if Greece leaves, then who else might hit the door? And it's just a volume of instability that the global economy can't really afford right now. And most bets are that it will not be on the level of a Lehman crisis, which provoked the 2007 global economic crisis, but that's not assured.
So that was a wonderful overarching look at all this. And I, let me go back to other guests here. Alice, Aris Melisoratos, what is your take on that? Different or the same?
Well, no, I think that the overview of the basics was accurate. It was right on. It is the uncertainty that this Greek crisis brings to the global economic situation that is a concern. Now, I'm impressed, actually, that it's had as little impact in the last few days as it may have had, because it looks like our global economies have matured to the point. 5 years ago, this would have been a huge disaster, much bigger than it is today. Sure, it undermines the confidence in the euro, and it does give other European countries that have debt crises of their own the opportunity to get out. And we really need a strong Europe. We need a strong currency in order to keep propelling the global economy. But the way our markets have taken this over the last few days is very encouraging. And I guess that goes back to the fact that the Greek economy is a relatively small portion of Europe's GNP. But if you take it at each level, in Greece, in the country itself, this is a huge crisis. The economy is stopped dead. There's no cash available. People can't pay their bills. They can't pay their contractors. They can't receive their pensions. So this is a true crisis in Greece. And the austerity measures imposed on the country by Europe have been pretty severe, and it's been a downward spiral for the last 5 or 6 years. The European Union couldn't help Greece because it's not a true monetary union. It doesn't have the capability to do monetary intervention. Each country has to do that itself, and Greece doesn't have the capability. Europe doesn't do it for them. But I think that the impact on the U.S. economy at this point is less than one would have thought. I think that we demonstrated that we're mature enough. But any uncertainty in the global climate causes markets to go up and down. And we need a strong European Union with a strong currency to feed the global economy, to keep ours going at the slow growth rate that we've had. And I think we need a healthy Pacific Rim. and this whole Pacific trade thing TPP, that's being worked on to keep the global economies on a growth path in order to employ the population of the planet. We got too many people on the planet that are unemployed.
Costis.
Yes. I guess I would like to start by saying I agree with what was said by both the other guests. And at the same time, the first impact that we are suffering in this country as a result of the crisis of the euro is that the euro is weak. That makes the dollar strong. That means that when we try to sell something abroad, it looks much more expensive to the prospective buyers, and our exports are being hurt. When we try to buy something from them, especially if they're Europeans, such as the Germans, for example, they're making out because the weaker euro is enhancing their sales. So in some interesting way, they are benefiting, even though they're experiencing a crisis that could be hurtful down the road for them, and we are suffering, even though the crisis in the long run would make them weaker and us stronger relatively to them. I would like to turn to the broader question and start with the question of assessing the Trans-Pacific Partnership. I think that it's
TPP, as most people call it.
TPP,
right.
So TPP is often seen as a matter of enhancing trade, but what it also enhances is the power of international capital and globally functioning corporations and banks and other financial institutions over the member states. Even the United States is giving up sovereignty in accepting, from what we hear from rumors, because nobody is allowed to see this whole document openly, they are actually being curtailed. And as a result of this curtailment of sovereignty, what you have is a situation where certain rules are being made, always favoring employers over employees, always favoring large corporate entities over those whose resources, whose environment, whose standard of consumption, standard of living are affected, always favoring private versus state services and production, which means cutting back on public education, on public health, on all aspects that are given out to the extent that they are to everybody, just on the strength of being a citizen in the country. In some countries, that includes even non-citizens, so it's just on the strength of being a human being in the country. Most other countries, that is not true, including here, unfortunately. And so as a result, what you have is this continuing redistribution. Greece reached the point through a series of crises that go back to very bad management and governing over the years, to the point where people got fed up and elected a government that they had not managed to elect ever since the end of World War II. And this is a left-wing government. And this is the only such government in Europe. And the problem with the rest of Europe, which is run by middling to conservative, to very conservative governments, is that this is a defiant government. It's the only one that defies the rule of austerity. And in so doing, it defies this whole framework that TPP stands for, that the bankruptcy of Puerto Rico stands for, that the Supreme Court decisions that tend to favor the dissolution of unions and the weakening of unions favor for, and all of these other things. And it is paramount for the Germans, for the French, for the conservative Spanish government, who are scared of their own opposition, and so on, to defeat, to crush that government. And everything that is being done, all the rules that are being imposed, all the intransigence that you see, has its ultimate purpose not negotiating this or that percentage payment back of a debt that they all know cannot be paid back in the long run, and they acknowledge that. But it is aimed at crushing that government. And then the question is the current government capable beyond its resistance rhetoric to implement policies that can resist that? And unfortunately, perhaps if we were to discuss that more, although that should not be the priority perhaps in today's show, they seem not to be quite prepared to do that fully. They seem to be bungling, and the referendum that's coming up is a referendum that is a big question mark. But the big question mark is in the minds of the voters, who are not even sure what exactly they're voting for in that referendum. So maybe that's less the issue. What is the issue is this idea that there's this global movement toward the suppression of sovereignty of elected governments, wherever they exist, so that the electors, who include common people, working people, people who are not multimillionaires and billionaires, are subjected to rules that they say, well, we can't help because we signed this secret deal, which now requires that
TPP,
we do this
we're talking
and that,
about, right.
TPP or whatever.
So let's tackle these two issues here. And Arash and Amar, I want you to come right back in here. And the three of you have spent a good time, a lot of time, but an important time, laying out these ideas. And so let's wrestle with these ideas and get our listeners to join them at 410-319-8888. So let's look at this question of the political question here. You're seeing a rise in Europe of parties like Syriza. That is the head of Greece.
Syriza is the Greek party. Right. I hope that Syriza. There's not a rise across Europe of that.
Well, you're seeing that in Spain.
It's unique in Europe at this point. In Spain, it's a potential. Podemos
right.
Has not been elected. And
only as mayors of, and of cities. But
Frau Merkel's hope that once the Syriza government is crushed, the Spaniards will say, no, we don't want any of that, and they will go back and vote democratically.
I think Syriza in Greece is a result of the austerity measures, of the oppression that the people have been put through. It's a reaction. I mean, let's face it, Greece invented democracy. Sometimes I say they haven't learned how to practice it. But for them to resort back into a system that has been dead for a long, long time is wrong. And I think that we should find a way to let that be a short-term thing, because I believe that Greece, although it has some systemic economic issues, can be a viable country, can be a viable part of the European community, and it needs stability more than anything else. With every reaction to a crisis, short-term or long-term, you end up having demonstrations. You end up showing the world that our primary economic strength, which is the beauty of the land and the strength of the tourism industry, we're chasing tourists away. So how can that be? We need to keep that cash flow going, because that's the biggest resource we've got. So I think that we need to find a way to be part of the European system, be a functioning part. And the European Union needs to find a way to step up to the relatively minor financial impact that is the debt of Greece. That is a small number compared to the European GDP and the European debt and everything else.
Let me cut in here for a minute.
I want to get back to Amaro, who's on the phone, but go ahead.
This is that I want to clarify one thing. The reference to Syriza and perhaps to that kind of left-wing party coming to power as a reference to some far-gone totalitarian regime is at best mythology. In Greece, this is the first time the left comes to power, and it is a party that is very clearly wedded to the democratic process, as the referendum shows. And what they have been fighting for is things that are clearly spelled out in the electoral campaigns and supported massively by people. Interestingly enough, the last battle was over the European side insisting on trashing Greek tourism by putting very high taxes on hotels and restaurants, even in the tourist areas, and the Greek government asking for an exemption there. And even that has been turned down. So in many ways, we should allow for the fact that what they are right now is something that the Greek people elected. And what they are doing, if it's meek, it's precisely because they are so very much concerned to honor the rules of democracy. They are not an anti-democratic party. The anti-democrats are the ones who made a coup d'etat in Greece in the 1960s and who have threatened at different times to do the same. The anti-democrats are the ones who lied to the European Commission about the finances of Greece in order to get into the euro. These are anti-democratic positions.
So, Amaro, let me give you back in before we go to break here, because I think the questions here around austerity and sovereignty and where the future economies are going and is a huge one. And you've heard the other two guests. So begin to comment on that before we go to break.
One really quick thing before that, and that is that I don't I think that we shouldn't be so sanguine about the fact that the markets haven't reacted. The markets haven't reacted because we've been in this perpetual crisis with Greece for 5 years, and no one actually believes that Greece is going to get to the point where it's going to exit. The only reason why the markets are up today is because there's a last-ditch sort of, not even proposal, but a letter that's being floated by the prime minister of Greece saying, hey, you know what, I actually want to come back to the negotiating table. And all the markets are up on that news. And so the problem is, though, that the Germans have said, well, it's a no-go. So I think one of the things that we have to realize about financial markets and the people that run markets is that they're human beings. And, you know, when you've heard something for 5 years that the sky is falling, once you hear it again, you don't believe it. I think once it becomes clear that Greece really is, you know, very close to the exit door this time, that we're going to see very severe reaction in a very short amount of time, and it's probably going to stun everyone.
What do you mean by severe reaction?
To come back to your main point, the reason why we're at this point now with this crisis in Greece is exactly because of austerity. And one of the problems with austerity is that it's a way that governments around the world are being used to cover up unfair economic policies that they've had. And so what do I mean by that? So, for instance, one of the reasons why the United States has had such severe deficits over the past, 15 years is because and going back to the Reagan era, is because we cut taxes, particularly on the wealthy, and then have jacked up spending on things that don't impact the economy or that help real people. And so that gap has to be closed some way. And the way that the Republican Party has responded is to say that we're going to actually cut the things that help average people in their daily lives and to take away the fundamental pillars that help America grow. So we're going to cut back on education, we're going to cut back on infrastructure, and we're going to cut back on all the things that make economies work in order to pay for these tax cuts that have gone to the wealthy. The same thing has sort of happened in Greece. I mean, austerity there is to cover up the sin that the Germans and the French and the wealthy countries in Europe knew at the time. I was in graduate school at the time. I was in Europe at the time. There was tons written about how Greece was cooking the books in order to enter the European Union and how the Germans and the French knew about it. But the reason why they looked the other way is because they wanted to have a currency union that would increase their leverage on the global market. And so they were willing to look the other way on what happened in Greece. And so now to cover that up, what they're telling the Greeks is that, well, this is all of your fault, and you spent money that you didn't have. But who lent them that money? The people that lent them that money were the Germans, were the French, and were Wall Street banks that knew that Greece were cooking the books. As a matter of fact, J.P. Morgan, there's a well-known case, helped the Greek government hide its debt for a fee so that they could get more loans.
I thought that was Goldman Sachs.
No, I think it may be a Goldman Sachs, but I think it was, yes, J.P. Morgan. But later the
side. So really, it was never the Greek government itself or the Greeks. It was, it was the big financial engineering firms that did what they thought was right for them.
We could explain the technicality of it, which is about hiding public debt so that it made public debt look lower than it was so that they could get loans. But that laid to the side. But now what the Germans and everyone else are doing on Greece is saying, well, you spent your way into this problem, and so it's all of your fault, and you bear all of the burden. And Greece is in a depression. Unemployment rate is at nearly 20%. And the country has, as was said before, come to a standstill. This is now the third government in 2011. So the third government in 3 years. And the reason why they've gone through so many governments is because when you have that severe of an economic crisis, it causes political turmoil. And so, now we've gotten to the point where the current Greek prime minister has rejected everything that's come before and has said, we're going to get out of austerity, but doesn't really have a plan. And so in all of these ways we're seeing, austerity is a reaction to these political decisions that are made by governments that are actually contrary to the interests of average people. And then they have to try to find a way to square the circle, and it's really hard to do that.
We have to take a very short break. I'm going to come back, and I really want our three guests. And folks, join us here at 410-319-8888 with your ideas and thoughts. What we're seeing around the world are people who are like in Greece and other parts of the world and in America, who oppose TPP and oppose the solutions to the debt crisis in Greece. And because, but not having an answer of where to go, because there's a larger economic structure on the planet that is determining where it's going to go, and there's a conflict going on here. Are these things connected? And where are we going? And who represents what? Join us at 410-319-8880. We're going to tackle it when we come back. We're hearing the great Willie Dixon, "I Can't Quit You," the great blues man born today, 100 years ago. We'll be right back. Welcome back. This is Mark Steiner. That's Gymnopédie by Erik Satie, one of the great composers of the modern times, born on this day, who passed away on this day, in 1925. Erik Satie. We are here with our three guests, wrestling with what is happening with Greece and TPP and how they're related, which is what we want to get right to. Kostis Papadantonakis, Aris Melissotoros, and Imara Jones are in studio with us. 410-319-8888 is the number here. Well, Imara's in New York, but you might as well be in the studio. Or you can write to us here at talkasanashow.org, 410-319-8888. But let me ask the three of this question. So what is, for you, this political dynamic that's happening in the world right now? I mean, I look at these things and we always take the news and what's happening around us as being disconnected, right? That Greece is somehow, and what's happening in the European Union is disconnected from what's happening here in America with the Trans-Pacific Partnership, with the TPP. That all that's disconnected from the crisis of America's only commonwealth that it controls as a territory in Puerto Rico, which is $65 billion in debt. And that these things are somehow disconnected, as is the kind of struggle in America over not enough work, not enough money to make ends meet for many Americans, and people fearing the TPP because they don't know what's inside of it and what it's saying, and the battle is taking place across the Pacific on this. But so to the three of you, and to all of you out there, 410-319-8888, are these connected? What is the connection between these seemingly disparate things? I see Kostis is about to jump in. I'll let you all jump in. Please do. Kostis, go ahead.
Okay. Well, I would like to refer to a book that came out about 3 years ago by Cliff Durand, who taught for over 30 years here at Morgan.
And, oh, Morgan, that's right. Excuse me. Right.
He was a professor of philosophy here and chaired the department for a number of years, too. And he his book, which he co-authored, is about the loss of sovereignty worldwide, the development of supranational institutions and alliances that dictate terms on all nations, starting with the weaker nations, but ultimately subjugating all nations, including the most powerful, the United States, which in a voluntary way, almost, given who runs the country and given Congress and all of that, and the lobbying power and the Citizens United kind of politics that we have, is very willingly acquiescing to passing on sovereignty to international finance, which is seen still as mostly American finance. And this leads to a progressive redistribution of income, a progressive effort to cheapen labor. So TPP allows for massive hiring of foreign-trained foreign nationals in the United States, displacing American workers, which has unions very upset. And at the same time, it opens up the doors for countries like Greece to empty out the people they have trained at great domestic expense through their public education system and send them out as ready-made human capital, as a brain drain, to the countries that hire them. Which is happening massively right now to the Greek population, but it's happening in many other countries. All these people we have from countries that are poor but educate a significant minority of the population, including India, including the Philippines, and so on, and bring their stuff here, are losing out in the process. So in the process, there's an equalization. As the Greeks leave Greece, you have even poorer Africans and Middle Easterners coming in to take the jobs at even lower wages, making the surviving Greeks there having to compete with them with lower wages. And this tends generally to depreciate the value of labor and to redistribute income to higher and higher up in the scale to smaller, fewer and fewer people.
So, Aris, how do you see that? Before we go to the phones and hear very quickly from Imara, I mean, the connections.
Well, I agree with this, the overall global redistribution and that loss of sovereignty by individual nations. And I can point to an example that actually heartens me in the U.S. One can say that in the last few years, no party, no leader has made too many correct decisions in Washington. Yet in spite of our government, our economy, our people, our entrepreneurs are strong enough to be able to almost make us energy independent. We keep the economy growing at some modicum, 2 to 3% rates. That's a huge plus, I believe, for us and for the global economy. Now, I bought into the fact that we need to be interdependent. We need to work with all the other nations, that this is a global economy, and that we need to worry about employing the world's populations. Back in 2009, I published a book on innovation, and I thought I had figured out how to put everybody to work. And then the Arab Spring came, and it kind of brought to the surface all these 30, 40 million worth of young Arabs that might be well-educated but no place to be employed. And then you see it happening in Europe. Then you see it happening all over Europe, and in Greece in particular, I think unemployment is 30%. We've always had a brain drain. The best and brightest Greeks study in the great universities in Greece and then come here and become superstars in our university system. Bright scientists, engineers, professionals of all types. The wealthiest Greeks own the ships that do 70% of the world's commerce, but they're not flagged in Greece. They're flagged in other countries, so they don't pay taxes to Greece. In Greece itself, people have fled any regulatory system that may have existed. People don't pay taxes. They're not disciplined. And therefore, I think that they need to rally around the strength of the motherland. They need to come up with a modicum of taxable systems, and they need to employ the population.
So, Imara, there's a bunch of phone calls come in I want to get to. Clarence and Mitchell up front, we're going to get those two calls. But could you kind of briefly put your two cents in on this particular issue about how these are connected?
Yeah, I don't really think that the redistribution is the problem per se, because it's not a set pool. I mean, the global economy is growing. It has been growing for a while now. The problem is that we totally disconnected the benefits from the global economy from the people who actually generate the wealth, and that's true everywhere. And actually, there was a report from the World Economic Forum, I think 4 years ago, which said that phenomenon is going to increase tensions between countries and within countries. And that's what we're seeing. The problem is that the people making the decisions and who are benefiting from those decisions are totally separate from the people that are affected by them and that are generating the wealth. And that's where the problem is. There's a huge hole in our decision-making process, and there's a huge hole, consequently, in the way that our economies are working. And that's the way that TPP and the Greek decision and income inequality here in the United States and the problems in Puerto Rico are all linked.
Let me get to the phones here, 410-319-8888. Clarence, you're on the air, line one.
Thank you, Mr. Steiner.
And
both of your guests in their last comments have alleviated me of having to be called a conspiracy theorist. thank you very much. I think that the sovereignty, the economic sovereignty of all of the smaller fish are systematically being dissolved so that they can be merged into what some people would say that new world economic order. What I would add to this, to what your guests say, is it appears to me that labor is the currency, and that has become the least important thing, the displacement of people and jobs and salaries and ways to survive on the planet. I would also tie into this, when you play a game of connect the dots, that most of the conflicts, the armed conflicts that we're seeing going on around the globe now, are somehow related to this, and also some of the ethnic battles that we see being fought around the battle, who belongs here and who doesn't here, are all a part of that. Thank you, for Mr. Steiner. Bye-bye.
Thank you so much. And let's get the other caller in here. We'll come back to our kind of other thoughts as we close out. 410-319-8888. Mitchell, you're on the air.
Hi there.
Hey, Mitchell, how are you?
This question is for Mark Steiner.
Okay. For me. All right.
And I want to talk about the trade agreement.
All right.
President Obama is head of the Democratic Party, but the progressive people in the Democratic Party are against this trade agreement, but all the Republicans are on board. That should give us quandary right there. And a while ago, I was on your show, and I used the F word, fascism. And you sort of took me to task for it. And
I did?
The thing that I said that was Barack Obama was the blackface, you know, sarcastically. Barack Obama was the blackface of the new corporate fascism. New corporate fascism. Since this trade agreement was done in secret, and the way it was done, and what we know about it, I want your opinion about my little comment now.
You want it now? Well, I think it'd be good for us to do that in an entire program to talk about what all that means. I guess it's hard for me to use what I think are sometimes understandable but archaic terms like fascism. But I think that in the overall sense, you're talking about a fascism's classical definition is a state that is nationally corporate nationalism. Yeah, that running a state is what fascism has always classically been, from Mussolini to Hitler and on. But I think that rather than the word itself, Mitchell, and you and I can debate this, I think that the question is, what is actually happening with this, and what are the forces at work here that are making things like TPP happen? One of the things that you said, Mitchell, and I think that other people are saying, and Clarence said, was that TPP is that we don't know what's in it. That there are entire sections, let's say, that are about the internet and on intellectual property that could change the entire dynamic of who owns what on the planet and who has access to the internet. There are a number of questions about how the TPP can overtake what Australia or the United States or New Zealand would say is a law saying, no, you can't do this because it violates our Trans-Pacific Partnership. But we don't know what those are. And I think that is the piece that has gotten lost in this. We don't know what's in it, and yet it was passed, despite what you're calling the kind of left part of the Democratic Party in fierce opposition, and some of the more libertarian elements of the Republican Party in opposition, but it passed anyway.
Well, just to clarify, TPP hasn't passed yet. What passed was the fast track authority, so that
yes,
when, TPP,
right, right.
when TPP is Thank introduced, you. That it will be able to go on a straight up or down vote without any amendments. But you're right, we don't know what's in TPP. A part of the legislation, however, is that I think it has to be posted for 30 days in public before the Congress votes on it. But we don't know what TPP is in it. We don't know what's in the agreement yet, but supposedly we will.
We won't have very long in this segment left. I have one more quick question. So, Kosti, we don't have very much time.
Yes. I simply want to say that we are in the process of looking at rules that have been made, and we're in the process of making rules through the TPP, for example. But behind the rules is the behavior that is being dictated, and perhaps that is passing from the rules that are economics to politics that enforce economics in the real sense, political economy. And this is the question of redistributing power. This is the question of who controls global resources, who set the patterns for what living is going to be for human beings over the next century. And most human beings are being now pushed in a direction of being essentially more masses that are being deprived and obligated to be happy with what they get, like the Greeks will be once this crisis is going to be resolved.
Well, let me end there with this thought for the three of you. And you've been very quickly kind of answering this thought before we have to go to break here. I want to get your quick thoughts on this. What happens, Aris, if over the weekend Greece votes no, we do not want to accept the European Union's strictures on our country and economy, and that leads to a pullout from the European Union? What would happen?
I really don't think the European Union will let that happen. I think they'll take the people's expression as just another data point, and they'll probably do some further negotiation. I think the European Union needs to keep Greece in the union.
Imara?
And that's at expense to Greece.
I'm sorry. I'm sorry. Imara, very quickly.
I don't think so. I think that if they vote to go out, it's a done deal, and that there's going to be an unpredictable chain of events that no one can know where it will lead, and it's going to be very serious.
If they vote no, which I am skeptical that they will, I think that what will happen would be there will be new elections, and that itself is somewhat unpredictable. If the result of the new elections is a full majority, strong Syriza-type government, then there would be a prolonged crisis of getting Greece out of the euro and of possibly getting Greece more and more into collaboration with other forces.
China
more than Russia, interestingly enough. And they would have to be rationing. They would have to be capital rationing for sure, but also rationing of essential resources. And that could be a multi-year crisis, by the end of which Greece would have the possibility of being a much closer to a social democratic, strongly socialistic society. And for these reasons, I agree with Aris that it is not very likely that this referendum would be allowed to happen. We have 3 days to find out.
We'll find out, and we'll talk about more of this. We'll be covering this on Monday, by the way, see what happens over the weekend, because it's really important. Kostis Papadantonakis, Aris Melissaratis, and Mara Jones, thank the three of you so much. This conversation has been great.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Appreciate
thank
your
you,
time. Mark. We're going to take a very brief break, and on our way to break, it's the great Herbie Mann. Push, push, push. Herbie Mann, one of the great flautists of all time, jazz man, passed away on this day, 2003. We'll be right back. It's time for the City Paper. What's inside? We'll find out.